welcome back to the Mainland Podcast. It is, what is this? Dave, this is episode like 93, I think.
93, yeah.
93. I am Michael Citro along with David Rowe from themainland.com. We appreciate you tuning into our little weekly podcast here, and it's Independence Day week. You got some Will Smith queued up to watch this week?
Absolutely. That's entirely what I've got to work a little bit on Independence Day. But after that, I'm absolutely, because I want to see the Bill Pullman speech, because it just gives you chills every time.
Dave, since we last spoke, Orlando City went on the road and won a game away from Orlando City Stadium.
Yes, they did, which was fantastic.
I agree. The team did not play great, but I mean, anytime you go to a difficult place to play like Rio Tinto Stadium in Salt Lake City, or actually Sandy, Utah, a place that is at a high elevation. You know, Oisuka has a raucous crowd, very knowledgeable soccer crowd, and you can get any points, let alone all three. It's a good day, and Orlando City gets win number two on the road this season, which sounds like not very many until you look at the league standings and you see that only three teams have more than two road wins all year. And Toronto FC is one of those. We play them this week. They have only three road wins all year. So it's not an easy – you know, we harp on how hard it is to win an MLS, and people think, oh, a broken record. Oh, you're just making excuses. But, no, it really is hard. It's like it's something like 18% of the games are road wins or something like that. Or 18% of road games are wins for the road team or something ridiculously low like that. It's not – a common occurrence. So Orlando City goes out there, gets just the one goal from Will Johnson, but former RSL man comes back to haunt his own team, his old team, I should say, and gets the Lions a big road win. It was one of those games where Orlando City didn't really connect well in the front. They spent a lot of time defending, which makes it even more impressive that they were able to get the shutout. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just I know a lot of people were very concerned the last time that Jose Aja started a game. I think it was the Montreal game where he just had a nightmare of a game. But man, what a comeback for Jose Aja, who was just a man among boys and darn near opened his Orlando City account. But he did help create the goal.
Yeah, and like you said, that Montreal game where he was just abysmal. This game was the exact polar opposite of that. I mean, he was everywhere. If you go back and you watch, even if you just go back and watch the condensed thing, highlight after highlight of him clearing the ball, stopping a shot. He was seemingly everywhere, even though, of course, he was mostly just in the defense. Although he did, like you said, he did have that one that unfortunately, I believe, hit the woodwork. And, you know, God, how many balls have hit the woodwork this year? It seems like we talk about it every other week.
Too many.
But like you said, you know, he was involved in the attack, and you know, good for Johnson getting the goal at his old haunting grounds. And you know, you could tell from the look on his face after he scored that goal, you know, how much that meant. Plus, you know, only his second of the year. So, and then of course, you know, Will played pretty good, you know, doing his regular steady, you know, being a leader on the field, you know, doing most things right. I mean, he wasn't perfect, but it was the kind of thing where, other than the goal, you didn't necessarily notice him. And that was one of those good things, like you always say about Nocerino. He just quietly did his job and he did it effectively. So really happy for Will. The down part for me was Kaká. I don't know if it was the altitude or all the travel or what, but he wasn't on his game, and you could tell when he was taken out that he was not happy with probably either being taken out and his performance.
Yeah, I didn't think that. I thought that a couple of guys in particular had pretty poor games for me. Kaká was one. The other one that really stood out and I think was even worse was Christian Aguita, who is next to Kaká on the field. So when, you know, you have no one you can link up with and the guy is not getting the ball to you, it makes for a very frustrating night, obviously. And I thought Christian Aguita, these three road games for him The young Colombian has had better days. He's been just a turnover machine the last few games, and it's really becoming a problem. If he doesn't get that turnaround really soon, and he won't be playing Wednesday because of the yellow cards he's picked up in the last two games, if he doesn't get turned around soon, he's going to lose his starting spot, because it's not going to be long before Jason Christ just decides to give it to Luis Gil or to Servando Carrasco and say, Christian, you're not good enough right now to be making the starting 11. And of course the window is opening up in just a week, Dave. So with the transfer window opening and then a very big need at midfield for a guy who can play the diamond, and if Christian has shown that he can't play in the diamond, you know, that's going to be maybe a problem that is resolved by him moving to another team and either on loan or maybe just a transfer out. And that certainly could happen. And his stock, I think, has gone down in the last few weeks. And it's tough to see, because he's a guy who works hard. He's a guy who certainly has some skills that were even on display at RSL, even though he didn't have a good game. He still is a good taker of the ball. I mean, he can tackle, he can stop, attacks, and he's good at that, but he just continues to do these little things wrong, like leave the ball in his feet too long, let defenders get, the other team get too close and let that press close him down too quickly. And, and he just makes some passes that make you think, did he just not see the guy 5 yards in front of him? Did he think the guy would maybe just let that ball go by him? I mean, it's been hard to watch. The other guy I thought that didn't have a great game was Giles Barnes. One thing that we kind of yada over was that Kyle Larin returned also for this game from his DUI and his going through the substance abuse and behavioral health program from MLS, and he cleared that program, was cleared to play, and he went out. And I thought that Larin brought really good energy to the team. I think he got into some dangerous positions. He wasn't really given good service throughout the evening, but he dropped back, he stayed involved, and I think he was able to be a little bit of a pressure valve to relieve some of the RSL attack by sending the ball up to him several times throughout the game.
Absolutely. And we talked about last week that, we thought he was going to go out and, he was going to try really hard, whether he had a good game or not. You know, he was going to put in the effort. And we saw that, like you said, when you're up top like that, and if the ball is not getting, fed in well for a striker, sometimes it can be tough to do anything other than come back, help out, and he did that. And like you said, I thought he had a great attitude. He hustled all night. So, I'm sure that he would have liked to have gotten that goal. But you know what? Orlando City gets the win. I'm sure he will take it, and I think it'll keep him motivated, going forward. That I think he's really going to want to score in the next game, and that might, having that fire under his rear end can only help.
Yeah, Dave, what do you think? Man of the match for Orlando City at RSL?
I would love to give it to Johnson because of, getting the goal at his old place, but I've got to go with Jose Aja because just how well he played and being it, the amount, I think he had 8 clearances or something. I mean, he was on top of the ball defensively all night, and it was a big reason why Orlando City got out of there with all 3 points. So for me, it was Aja.
Yep, the big Uruguayan for me as well. I thought that Jose did a fantastic job on defense. He obviously got onto the end of that free kick that rattled off the bar, and as Jonathan Spector was getting the hell fouled out of him right on the goal line, Will Johnson cleaned up the mess that was left in the box and scored the goal. So he kind of helped create the goal. He was very instrumental in breaking up many attacks and keeping those crosses out of the middle and keeping them from finding their intended target. So I think Aja is a great selection. I thought it was a good game for the back line, all four. I don't think that Sutter and Toya did a good job in the offensive part part of it, but I also think that Toya was a little bit handcuffed by playing behind two guys having a bad night in Nagita yeah. and Kaká, so that didn't help at all. But I thought, you know, yes, Toya got rounded once or twice, but I think for the most part he did a really nice job in the second half as he you know, started to figure out Brooks Lennon a little bit and kept him from being more dangerous as the game wore on. He actually, you know, got into a rhythm and was able to force him wide and to not even concede corners on several of those attempts. He was really good at just deflecting the ball back off of Lennon out for goal kick. So good job, I thought, by Toya overall. I thought he started a little bit soft, but he got better as the game went on. I thought Sutter did a pretty good job on his side as well. You know, not a perfect night. They have some really quick, dynamic attackers that can make you look bad. But luckily, they were never really able to provide a final service because the center backs really did a fantastic job. And I also thought that the midfield did a good job coming back and helping out as well. So, you know, good night defensively. And sometimes those are just the kind of ways you need to win on the road. Just, you know, just go out and get an ugly win. The home team is coming out flying. They'd won three in a row at home. They got their own crowd going. They got the altitude. They know they're going to wear you down over time. So they want to come out fast, impress you, and make you run all night to get that advantage late. And I thought that the guys did a good job of standing up to that.
Absolutely. And we haven't, you know, we've only tied with RSL previous to that. So, you know, getting that win, especially on the road, and, you know, we talked about 10 minutes ago, I mean, how important it, you know, how hard it is to get a win on the road. So to be able to do that, and have it be a 1-0 in a hostile environment, and then just defend. That was, I think it was an important win. I think it's going to help team mentality. And then, you know, Laren, you know, being able to get back and get his legs back under him, you know, when he goes to someplace with a little bit more oxygen, maybe it'll be even better.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes from there. But I think it's something they can build on, and hopefully we'll see a more determined Kaká, and hopefully the return of Carlos Rivas since he's back in training now. So, you know, we'll see what happens Wednesday against Toronto. We'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show. One thing that happened before the RSL game, but it happened after we spoke last week and recorded this podcast, was the departure of Matias Perez Garcia. Mm-hmm. He was out of contract at the end of June. The team did try to re-sign him, but the two sides were too far apart to come to an agreement. And, you know, rather than go through the charade of having a guy play when he, you know, he's going to be gone in a, you know, as soon as the game ends and the clock strikes midnight, you know, it was just a case of where they decided to waive him and let him get started on finding a new place to play. So MPG is gone. Your thoughts on that, Dave?
Well, the fact that he's gone, you know, he was hit or miss for us. I mean, there were some games where he was really good. There were other games where he just disappeared. I'm glad he was able to get the goal before he left, you know, just for your sake. And then, you know, if it's professional sports, this happens. You know, you have players who have contracts, negotiations happen. Sometimes they don't come to terms and, you know, players go to different teams. We see this in every sport. MLS is no different. Just because, you know, he was a guy that Jason Kreisch brought in doesn't mean that, you know, it was going to work out, which, you know, I think that they would have liked to have given him the chance. Obviously, he was, you know, looking for more money, or they were looking for less, or, you know, we don't know the details of that. But regardless, he's gone. Now, what the implications are for that is, what does that do for the upcoming transfer window? So I think that's probably the more interesting thing. You know, whatever money they would have there, we now got for something else. Obviously, we're, you know, you just mentioned it, we're going to be looking for needs in the midfield. And so for me, it's, you know, I'm sorry to see him go because I think he played hard when he was here. And, you know, wish him the best of luck, you know, wherever he ends up. But I'm now just chomping at the bit, curious to see what happens during the transfer window and you know, what moves Orlando City makes.
Yeah, I was excited when the trade was made because I always kind of liked MPG as a player. He was a guy that I didn't see San Jose play much, but when I did see them, he seemed to stick out to me as a guy who would win the ball. He was hard to get the ball away from, and I thought he brought some of that to Orlando City. But he did have periods of time where he disappeared and was, you know, there were games where he was the guy with the fewest amount of touches in the midfield. And you know, you look at a guy like that, and he's got to get on the ball. So there were, you know, this was a guy who, because MLS is a salary cap league, you can't have guys making as much money as he was on the bench. And he wasn't a first 11 choice for Jason Christ. So it makes sense that probably the club came in and said, hey, we'd like to keep you, but I don't know under the salary structure if we can keep you at what we had yet. So, you know, your production says you might be worth this. Can you live with that? And he probably wanted a raise because, you know, who in life doesn't want a raise, you know, every year?
Yeah.
You know, cost of living goes up. You want to make a little bit more money. So probably it started there. It probably started with him wanting more money and the club being completely opposite, wanting to give him less. And I don't think it was a respect thing. I think it was just a practical look at the balance sheet and saying, we have a bench player here making, you know, right on the cusp of DP money, so we can't have this. And you know, that's just what it is. And I mean, we could talk about the DP situation in Orlando all day, because it just other than and this year maybe we're not seeing what we want to see out of Kaká currently. He started off very brightly this season once he returned from the injury, but I don't think that these slots have been used how the current structure of MLS needs them to be used. The current structure of MLS says your DP should be youngish guys who are good at scoring, Alessandrini and, you know, Nikolic, guys like that, Lodero, guys that can either produce goals by scoring them themselves or set other guys up for goals. And that's not what Orlando City has in their DP situation right now. So, you know, MPG making on the cusp of DP money, it didn't make any sense. So I would rather see the team try to use those, you know, use those funds a little bit more wisely. And so I'm happy they didn't cave in and give him a big raise just to keep him and just to keep the fans happy that like him, because, you know, the production is just wasn't there. Like I said, he's never going to score a goal for Orlando City. And if you believe that ball that Kaká centered to him was over the end line, then really he didn't score for Orlando City. So, you know, I will miss him. I thought he was fun to watch, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over losing MPG. You know, he'll just be part of the rich tapestry that is the history of Orlando City. So, peace out, MPG. Hope you bounce back and land somewhere really good. I mean, at his age, you're not gonna you know what you've got. It's not gonna get any better. It's
right.
It's just that's just the way it is. So we'll see what happens during the window. Lando Pride played two games since we last spoke, Dave. They went out to Sky Blue, a team they had never beaten, and they the script was being followed. They scored first again, gave up the lead again. And it looked like Sky Blue was going to do it again, like, you know, just another gut punch, because they were awarded not one, Dave, but two penalty kicks in the first half.
And, yeah, one of those was – one know, of those I could see. The other one –
Aubrey Bledsoe stopped the first one, and the second one just not able to stop, although she did get the direction properly, you know, properly figured out. She knew where Kelly O'Hara was going to go with the ball. Just a really well-struck ball. She just had a little too much power and a perfect placement. If she had her fingers a couple inches longer, maybe she gets to that. But Sky Blue gets a huge lift in basically the last kick of the first half to tie up the game, and then come out and score on a bicycle kick in the first minute of the second half. And it's like, oh, here we go again, another Sky Blue win, 2-1. That just would figure, because they've already done that. But no, it was not to be, because the Pride came back with two goals. Marta scored one, and then the rookie, Rachel Hill, gets up and gets her first NWSL goal on a header, and get the game winner late in the contest. So Orlando Pride came home with all 3 points from, you know, a very good Sky Blue team that's currently above the line.
Well, the 77th minute, Cali put that cross in. It took a Pride deflection to Marta, who was just it was almost like somebody was up, you know, using the force to direct the ball to her. And when she's got it at her feet in the box with, you know, hardly anybody around her, well, you know, she's going to score. So, yeah. I mean, the word that came to my mind was she just calmly put the ball in. I mean, it was just like, oh, here's the ball. Let me put it in the net.
Mm-hmm. She one-timed it, struck yep. it well right inside the post. No chance for the keeper on that one. And, you know, just the kind of goal you expect her to score.
And then on Hill's header, which I think we should call that from now on, Marta actually did a nice little back heel flick to Catley, who, you know, put another cross in, and Hill got her head on it, and, you know, to get out of there with 3 points, which was I watched that game, and man, I was sitting there thinking the same thing you were. I was just like, okay, here we go again. But then they got the one in the 77th, and then they got that last one, and I'm jumping up and down in my living room, you know, just going, wow, this is fantastic.
Yeah, it was terrific to see that back heel from Marta was very slick, and yeah. Catley put in a nice cross, and Hill went up over two defenders to get that, including Christy Pierce, who, if you don't know that name, maybe you know her as Christy Rampone from the U.S. Women's National Team, many, many years, one of the best center backs in international women's soccer. So, you know, great job by Hill. She's going to definitely remember that goal forever, and the fact that it was a game winner makes it even sweeter. So, road win for the Pride, their second straight road victory. Then they came home to play Chicago over the weekend on the doubleheader. Game got off to a late start because of the bad weather. Don't know if that affected things, but certainly the Pride didn't seem to have their usual energy. They rotated the squad a bit, so Camilla didn't start. We saw some new faces in the lineup, and you know, it was a pretty evenly matched game, although I thought the Pride played pretty decent soccer. They just didn't look real sharp in the final third, which you would expect playing the third game in 8 days or whatever mm-hmm. it was. And of course, Chicago was coming in across the country from Seattle, so they had also traveled. But the thing about the Chicago Red Stars is they have a back line that is just unbelievable, Dave, in front of a you know, world-class goalkeeper, Alyssa Nair. And it's so hard to break them down because they're not only organized, they're very, very quick. So you think, oh, I got to step on this person. I'll turn the corner. But then they close that distance and take the ball away from you because they're also very physical. So they can come in, get the ball, shoulder you up, and knock you down, take the ball cleanly. And over the course of a game, that wears you down. And it's very hard to score on the Red Stars. I think I'm not looking at the standings right now, but I think they're either the fewest goals against or second fewest goals against in the league.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they had a couple of chances, but, you know, they needed a penalty kick to win the game. And that was Kristen Press taking that penalty kick, not just any old schmo.
No.
So she scores the goal and they win the game. It wasn't for lack of trying. The Pride hit the post a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Allie Krieger hit the crossbar late. Not the Pride's day. But we did get to see Alex Morgan.
That's true. Alex was back, and you know, it's not surprising, like you said, with Chicago's back line. That's actually 3-1-0 losses the Pride have to Chicago at this point.
Yep.
But, you know, there was a lot of rotation of the lineup, as you said. You know, so even though Alex is back, well, one, she hasn't been playing with these players for, you know, quite a while, so she's got to find her feet again in MLS, plus coming off of injury. And then, you know, you couple that with however many games, you know, 3 games in however many days. So they're tired. You've got a different squad out there. Alex is back. And then, you know, to only lose on a PK, and unfortunately this time, you know, Bledsoe guessed the wrong direction, you know, whereas in the last game she guessed the right direction twice, you know. Although she did almost make up for it on the corner on the other end, when she went all the way down on the field and almost was able to try and get that ball in, which, you know, good for her for hustling down there and giving that a shot, coming in behind everybody and seeing mm-hmm. if they could do something. It didn't work out, unfortunately, but, you know.
Well, it was cleared right off the line. I mean, yeah. it found, you know, the cross came in, Bledsoe, it would have been the ultimate It would have been the ultimate podcast bump for Aubrey Bledsoe for the goalkeeper to score. She got a header on frame. It was cleared off the line. Again, that was just one of those unlucky things for the Pride. They just couldn't quite overcome these little things. One cleared off the line. It was cleared to Allie Krieger, who one-timed it in, smacked the crossbar.
Again.
Completely had Nair beat, just couldn't beat the woodwork. And, you know, it was just, what can you do? At that point, you throw up your hands and go, it's just not our day. I was a little surprised maybe that we saw Alex when I saw what the weather was doing, because I didn't know that if Tom would risk her first game back in that kind of, you know, that kind of slop. But the field really held up well, and Alex got out there and got used to her new teammates a little bit, although I think that, you know, certainly she'll have better days. It's very hard to come in and affect a game late off the bench like that. So, but she was able to track down some balls and, you know, get some things set up in the corner, give off to Marta. I thought that down the stretch when the team really needed Marta, they definitely took too many direct over the top balls. I thought they were just hoping that Alex could get onto something, and they were forgetting that, you know, they got a goal machine in the mm-hmm. midfield that can either score them or create them. So I think that's probably something that Sermani will address. It's like, okay, Alex is back. That's no reason to just chuck it, you know. But you know, Chicago and North Carolina Courage are the two teams that to me are the class of the league.
Yeah.
And you know, let's face it, the Pride deserved at least a point for that game. They didn't get it, but they definitely played well enough that I'm not bothered that you know, they've lost two in a row at home and haven't scored in those games, but I'm not bothered by losing to Chicago the way I was against Houston. And I'm not bothered by losing to Houston the way they played the last couple of games since firing Randy Waldrum. They went on the road this weekend and beat a stubborn FC Kansas City team mm-hmm. on the road. So, you know, since Waldrum was fired and Carly Lloyd got back, two things that happened basically at the same time, the Houston Dash are no longer the pushovers they were earlier in the season. So good to have Alex back. I still feel good about where this team is. They have to go on the road again. but I think I still say that they're set up as bad as that first couple of months of the schedule was. I think that they're set up in a good position. They get to go to Washington. The Spirit have not been good this year, so hopefully they go out and make it three in a row and set a new team record with consecutive road wins with three if they go out there and do that on Saturday.
Well, they'll have a little bit more rest, and Alex will have a little more time to you know, get that connection with the teammates. So, you know, I agree. I think it'll be better going forward. You know, first game back, and like we said, that just seemed to be one of those games where nothing's going to go your way. You just chalk it up to that, and you move on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Laura Alloway was let go today, Dave, by the Pride. She was one of the first international signings by the team, center back, Australian international. She was thought to be, you know, one of the key pieces brought in last year. But last year, she and you know, whoever was next to her, it was Monica, it was Tony Presley, they struggled, and they gave up way too many opportunities on balls over the top, and she doesn't have a lot of pace, and it was a problem that teams exploited. And this year, she came out, played a couple of games, and did not play well again, and she went to the bench, and Allie Krieger was moved inside to play, and Tony Presley was brought back into the starting lineup after really a transformative offseason by her, both in the workout room and with her changing in diet, and she's really really come a long way. I think Tony Presley's been a real strength of the team this year, even though she gave up the penalty on Saturday night. I think that was just a case of being tired and maybe not realizing that as long as she keeps Casey Short a little bit wide, she's probably okay, because Casey Short's not probably going to score from that angle.
Right.
You know, it was a little tired mistake, and tired minds make tired bodies do things they shouldn't do. And, you know, it's a little bit sad to see Laura Alloway go, but it's not a surprise. I mean, she's a player that probably commands a decent salary for the women's side. She takes up an international slot. So this will give Tom Sermani some flexibility to bring in some more talent and try to get this team up to the level of the Chicagos and the North Carolinas.
Yeah, and you know, we wish her luck, you know, going forward wherever she ends up. But you're right. It's kind of going back to the same thing we're saying about MPG. You can't have that kind of salary on the bench, and it's not a personal thing. It's a business thing. And you know, they call it professional soccer for a reason. You know, you have to make professional business decisions based on what's good for the team and the organization. And I think that's all this was. You're right that hopefully that will free up, you know, some flexibility for Shimani, and we'll get another piece back in there to help out with Tony and Allie, and or you know, maybe we bring somebody, you know, in that's already here, and we plug a need elsewhere. But it will. I agree. I don't think it's a surprise. We wish her luck. But I at the end of the day, I think it was just a business decision.
Yeah, the NWSL, those international slots are so valuable. You have to hit home runs with those. Those have to be starters. Those international slots have to go to starters.
Yeah.
So you can't have an international slot languishing on the bench if you don't plan on using her in case, unless there's an emergency and you have no choice. Because, I mean, even Tom's second-choice center backs right now have been playing midfield for him the last few games, you know, with Alana Kennedy playing moving up to a defensive midfield spot. And Monica can play center back in a pinch as well. So not really a surprise, but we'll miss Laura because we like the Aussies.
Yeah.
And the Pride, as I mentioned, they go to the Spirit this week, and we'll hopefully get that third straight road win. OCB, they hosted maybe one of the hottest teams in the USL in the second game, the nightcap of the doubleheader on Saturday. Unfortunately, a lot of people, because of the rain and the weather and the long afternoon, did not hang around to watch a pretty entertaining game between OCB and FC Cincinnati. And that game ended in a 1-1 draw. Speaking of the podcast bump, Jordan Schweitzer gets his first goal with OCB to open the scoring early. Cincinnati was very dangerous on the counter all night. They got a goal back from GB Fall and tied it up, but I thought overall a really nice game from Earl Edwards Jr. and from the, you know, for the most part, I think the defense played really well. I think that if you ask me who did not play well, Albert Dequa didn't look real great up top at striker, but I wonder how much of that was just Cincinnati's you know, veteran leadership on defense.
Well, and speaking of Dequa, I mean, he had that shot in the 68th minute that it was saved. Look, when I was looking at it, that could have easily been a foul that you know isn't called, and maybe that makes a difference because he was being taken down from behind as he was trying to head the ball. I mean, so I think that was a pretty badly missed call that might have made could have made the difference there, because I mean, you know, both goals were scored in the first, you know, 17 minutes of the game, and then it was a lot of defense, at least for OCB side. Jordan's goal in the third minute, it was a beautiful curling shot over two defenders. So kudos to him and congratulations. You know, we're glad we could help you out with the podcast bump. And like you said, Edwards played an excellent game again. It's odd we have such great consistency from all of our goalies, no matter which team you're talking about. So that's a blessing that it should not be overlooked. I thought that the it was interesting in the 86th minute when Pierre Silva gets a yellow, and then they change their mind and go straight to a red. And I watched the replays on that. I think it probably deserved a yellow. He was pushing a little too much. I think the reason that he got the red was when he came around, and if you watch it in slow motion, somehow his cleats got onto the thigh of the Cincinnati player, and I think that was what elevated it to a red.
Yeah, he grabbed the player from behind, which was, I think, just a tired foul, and it was definitely, you know, yellow card worthy. You pull a guy back, you're going to get a yellow card. I don't think he intended to to cleat him or anything. I don't think that was intentional.
I don't
but
either.
But the AR certainly thought it was, because the AR basically talked the ref into giving that red.
Exactly, and I disagree. I mean, I agree that it was absolutely a yellow. I mean, when I saw it, I'm like, okay, he's going to get carded for that. And then when they went to the red, I was glad I was able to go back and look to see what they saw that they potentially thought. I agree. I don't think it was intentional. I don't think it deserved a red. And, of course, that's going to – you know, he's going to have to sit now. That's going to hurt because, yeah. You know, we talked about how you know, the people are you know, game planning for him. So,
yeah,
that's – that hurts. But, you know, all in all, I mean, to go up against FC Cincinnati, as you said, one of the hottest teams in USL right now, and to come out with a 1-1 tie, I think overall the team played a really good game, and in particular, you know, Edwards had a fantastic game.
Yeah, and kudos to Cincinnati for traveling well. I think in the USL you're not used to seeing that, but it was about 100, 150 Cincinnati fans made the trip down for the game to sit in the rain and get to see that game. But it was an interesting game. The you know, OCB lost both meetings with Cincinnati last year. This year they played three times, and so far a win on the road and a draw at home. So, you know, if those results were reversed, you'd go, hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I think it's good anyway, because I think Cincinnati has a lot of quality. I think you saw it in the midweek against the Chicago Fire. And, you know, they have a lot of guys who are MLS tested. They've played some MLS games and a lot of experience. And just you can just tell when these, you know, 26-year-olds are going shoulder to shoulder with the 19 to 22-year-olds, you can tell which one's going to win the ball before they even get there.
Yeah.
Just because of the frame has already been filled out on some of these older guys. So, you know, they've been in these weight training programs for several years, whereas some of these kids are just, you know, just in their first or second year of doing this professional gig, and you know, they haven't quite gotten their bodies there yet. So, you know, I think it's a decent result for Anthony Pulis's guys, and I'm sure they'll take the point, move on, and try to improve upon that in their next outing, which will be Saturday when they host the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. So we've got quite a bit going on here to talk about next week, even though we're going to head into an international window. Speaking of international windows, former Orlando City player Dom Dwyer plays his first game with the U.S. men's national team, scores his first goal with the U.S. men's national team, and basically helps lead the U.S. to a 2-1 win in an international friendly over Ghana. It was, you know, it was a good game for the U.S., a good tune-up, a little bit of a revenge since Ghana's gotten the best of them over the years for the most part. And some of these new guys look really good, Dave. I mean, Kellen Acosta scores on just an unbelievable free kick. And, you know, really, really nice game for Dom all around until, you know, they subbed him off late in the second half. But I thought he was dangerous the whole time he was on the pitch.
Yeah, you know, you couldn't help but watch everything he was doing. You know, he got that first goal for the U.S. And well-deserved for him. You always love it when they get their first goal in their debut. And then he looked dangerous all night that he was in there. It was an excellent showing from him. Of course, Guzan made that save on the PK, which kept well. Honestly, I mean, given the end of the score line, that was a big save. Acosta, you're right. That shot was absolutely gorgeous. And so I, you know, knowing that, you know, I mean, we didn't have some of the big names out there in that one, given that it was friendly at Ghana, you know, kind of a tune-up game and an opportunity for Bruce to see some other guys, you know, including guys like Dom, which I think Dom did a great job of advertising himself to Bruce during that game. I think that that was everything that you can ask for in a result and a friendly. You know, getting to see those younger guys, getting the win. You know, more so going forward, just having seen, you know, some of the options that you're going to have as we move forward in the competition.
Tremendous save late in the game, too, to deny Bedoya of a goal, which I'm still not sure how the goalkeeper got over to make that, but it was nearly a 3-1 final. But 2-1, good tune-up for the Gold Cup, and we'll get that action underway coming up this weekend as well. The U.S. against Panama on Saturday afternoon, about an hour after the Pride kickoff against the Spirit. So we're going to do the two-screen thing again on Saturday on the 8th. So that's a lot of ground to cover, a lot of games, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of happenings, people leaving the team, people returning. You know, we had Laren and Morgan back. We had Alloway and MPG out. We had, you know, four games to discuss. But let's get to our guest because we got an interesting take this week, a little bit different than our normal guest. So let's get to that right after this. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, very happy to have with us television and radio broadcaster. You know him as the voice of Orlando City SC, our own Jeff Radcliffe. How you doing?
Fellas, how are you? Mike, Dave, good to hear from you. And I really appreciate the call. Usually I think it means that you've exhausted your regular list of guests. So I do appreciate being at least on the end. Thank you.
I will cop to this, Jeff. It was my fault that we didn't have you on about a year ago at this time. I remember asking you and you said yes, and then I don't know what happened. I think I just had a senior moment and forgot that I had asked you, and then I got
no there's far more important people than me. I'm kind of like the last resort, and that's fine by me.
No, there are other resorts that are we won't go into that. So, Jeff, I want to start out by, you know, asking you, you know, just how you think this whole because you've been with the club for quite a while. How do you think now that we're 3 years into this MLS thing, how do you think things are going for the Lions? And did you think it would take this long, you know, for Orlando to still kind of be struggling to find a playoff spot?
Honestly, I thought, and I my history at the club goes back to 2011, although I've never really been a full-time employee of the club. I've always been contracted to do the games. And then obviously, you know, once being with MLS, and that changed a little bit and got a little bit more involved. But I thought once we got in, because of things like the results in the Open Cup, I'm like, look, if we can, you know, this club can win with players, you know, that the players that they were winning with at USL level and beating MLS teams, I thought, like most fans, we're going to own this league. Well, it as I've learned, and now covering MLS for this the third season, that it's not that easy. It's not that simple. And it would have been nice. I think the first year was a success. I mean, I know that there were, defy expectations is the club's motto, but I still define that as a success. We were the second most impressive expansion team in the history of the league, and you know, a couple of, you know, what we had, what, 11 or 12 red cards that season. I mean, we were that close, and then again last year you had a coaching change. So I mean, just to be that close on the precipice 2 years in a row with so many things that had, you know, the change was the only constant last year. I'm not surprised. I think this is the year you have to do it, and I think, you know, going back to the Adrian Heath days, Adrian thought it was going to take 3 years. He thought year three was the year that they would be pushing for a playoff spot. That's where he really legitimately felt all these young players, the Higuitas, the Rivases of the world, but that's when they were going to mature. And look at them now. So, I would say I would expect it maybe of last year, but no, I think this is the year, and I would stand by that.
Well, like you said, coaching change last year, you know, tripping things up maybe a little bit. Obviously, we've had Jason all offseason and all this year. What changes are you seeing in the approach that Orlando City is taking? And what is it that makes you think? Is it just the player development, or is it something else or a combination of things that makes you think that this is going to be the year?
I think Jason does bring a level of professionalism. Not that Adrian didn't, but things, you know, you have a conversation with Anthony Pulis after you know, the coaching change last year, and he was blown away at the preparation and the organization that, Jason Christ brought, and that's the way Ant is. So he has loved it. You know, it was a good change for him, and he thinks. And it's a long run. It's a long process. You got to get your own players to fit a system. You know, the diamond was talked about the minute he was hired. Still, we don't have the players to be able to run that kind of system if that's what he wants to do. Are there things he's probably still learning on the job, learning about Orlando, learning about this organization? Yes. But you look at just the improvement defensively this year and seeing out results, especially early in the season, in the first 2 months where they were winning one goal games. Those are games that Orlando City was not winning in 2015 and 2016. So that work improvement alone, I think, gets you above the line. And, you know, I think any fan, anybody watching, you want to see a better quality soccer, maybe better possession, a little bit more proactive type of approach. But, you know, getting results, I think this RSL game that we just saw is a perfect example of pulling something out of nothing. I mean, there's other ways to say that exact phrase, but, you know, I think because of those reasons, they've learned how to be an MLS club. It's going back to like the old Dom Kinnear Houston teams, being very pragmatic, trying to get a result when you can, when you're not on your best, and they've been able to do that. And you're still above the line and way above and comfortably. So, you know, I think you just stay there. Do I think they're one of the best teams in the East? Eh, not yet. Is it possible? Maybe with a couple of, moves in the transfer window, that's certainly a possibility. But right now, I do think they're one of the top, you know, four or five teams in the East, and that's where they're at.
You know, Jeff, I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, what you do for a living and for the club. Our own Austin David has done some broadcasting and has actually done some for the club as well. There's a trend in sports that it's starting to become a little bit more prevalent as leagues and networks try to save money, but it's something that's always been around in soccer, I think, since for a good long time, and that is calling a game when you're not on site. What are the difficulties that presents for you, and how do you deal with that challenge?
It's not the easiest. It's not the most optimal situation when it comes to calling a game, and Austin is aware of it. It's just with MLS and the way the TV ratings are structured, or TV ratings actually happen, they structure broadcasts. A lot of the league does the same thing we do, where we broadcast our away games that are local televised from a studio. It's I would say maybe 5 or 6 teams don't do that and actually send their crews on the road, maybe 7 or 8, somewhere in that 5 to 8 range. And any, you talk to any play-by-play person, any commentator, you know, calling off a monitor, it's difficult because you're not seeing the whole field. The worst is, you know, you don't see the near flag sometimes when it comes to the assistant referee. But the biggest thing is you lose the atmosphere. You know, you don't have the crowd noise that you really get fired up for, because, you know, that energy that I have is built off hearing the wall and hearing the crowd support. That actually gets me jazzed up, and I think that really adds to, adds to a call. And I think there was a perfect example is this. This was the Women's World Cup a few years back, and a number of the Fox commentators were actually calling games from off of a monitor, whether that be in L.A. or New York or Miami, I'm not even sure. But these are really regular season broadcasters at ESPN and Fox News all the time, like Glenn Davis. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It didn't sound right. It was like there was no energy in the call, and these guys normally do very, very well with that. Come to find out they're on a monitor, and it sucks. When you're in a little studio calling a game, it sucks the life out of a broadcast. So it's very difficult, but it's the reality of things. They do, in our case, we bump in the crowd noise. We have what they call a dirty audio feed that comes into the studio at Channel 9 when we're doing this at 27. And so we have that audio from on site in our ears and also in the studio. So that helps quite a bit, but it's not the same. There's nothing like being at Orlando City Stadium and before that, the Citrus Bowl, to do a game live. And we've done monitor games in 2014. Tom and I did all the games at Disney from the ESPN production studio, which was behind, you know, a couple buildings over. So we were never on site for those. And those were really difficult because the camera angles were way off. So, it's just a fact of life. But BN Sport has been doing international games from studios in Miami for years, you know, at least a decade. So it's the way things work. And, you know, I think MLS just it's just kind of taken taking the same approach. I mean, you'll see a lot of La Liga games, you'll see Serie A games called, you know, English language are called back here in the States. So it's a cost issue. It does cost a lot to rent a truck and have the full crew and to rent satellite time. Whereas, you know, I just went on this trip with Tom Traxler out to RSL. Well, that's a radio game. You pay $300 for an audio engineer, you pay for a flight and a hotel, and you can get the broadcast on. It's not so simple with TV.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned the difference that, you know, being in there, the atmosphere contributes to your being able to call the game better. I'm curious of your thoughts, your professional thoughts on the difference between, you know, going from the Citrus Bowl to Orlando City Stadium and what a difference that's making, not just for obviously the team and the fans, but for you and what you do.
Yeah, I'm closer to the field. I mean, maybe... Yeah, maybe a little lower, but because of the steepness of the actual seats, closer to the action, you can see a little bit better. You know, sometimes when players are on that far side, because you know you kind of get caught. You don't want to call off a monitor. Sometimes you do check to see what and TV and radio are two totally separate animals. But what, you know, when it comes to television, you know, you'll misidentify a player if they're far away sometimes because a lot of the haircuts look the same, what have you. And I had that same issue in the Montreal game. I misidentified their first goal because I saw a guy streaking by. I thought that was the guy and called it. So the Citrus Bowl was definitely a little bit more difficult. And certainly the environment wasn't quite the same, but it was still excellent, especially on those big crowds where we had the 35 plus. So, I would say it's definitely got the environment is better now because of it's our place. But having that environment and that energy has never been an issue. But I do prefer the new stadium. And I definitely what I hate is Yankee Stadium, calling a game from the baseball press box, which is perfect. If I was calling a baseball game, I would be right behind home plate. But that thing, and Tom and I call it cattywampus. It's offset, not just going away from you, but it's also offset. So you can't see balls down the line. And if it's in that far corner, you're guessing on who's over there. If you don't have a monitor.
So Jeff, you know, one of the things that you've done over the last several years here is that you've called MLS, NWSL, OCB games in the USL. How do you keep all of those players straight in your head over the course of several different leagues? Because, it's difficult enough to learn every, you know, all the players in one league, but learning them in three is quite a challenge.
Yeah, I think at least this year, the benefit is, I'm just speaking to MLS, is that I've covered the league now for, you know, this is being the third year. And so I know a lot of the key players for a lot of the teams because I've seen them. I've called the game already with them. And then you just got to adjust your roster a little bit, maybe move a formation around. And it's doing other teams has become a lot easier. Orlando is never a problem, whether that's OCB or Pride. Now, this year I'm not doing Pride because Lifetime took that contract I was initially going to. And then they moved me to OCB to fulfill my contract obligations. I have so many games I have to do in addition to MLS. So that was originally the plan that I was doing Pride, but then Lifetime got the contract. So they not only do their games of the week, but they actually produce all the games. So they have their own talent to do that, which saddened me a little bit because I run to be a little, part of the Pride. But at the same time, I'm still getting to go to the stadium every day and see OCB, which actually helps me more with the first team because I get to see, last year, Tony Rocha and Mikey Ambrose, I saw them a lot more than some of the other guys, you know, that would call a game. They wouldn't know who they are. Now, you know, I can explain a perfect example. I'm talking with Dan Kelly when we were training. He's Chicago Fire's play-by-play man, and he was calling the game at RSL, and he didn't know who Richie Larea was. He didn't know who Haji Berry was because, you know, he didn't see them play. He didn't know how they played because he didn't, you know, they had very, very little time at the MLS level. Well, I've seen them for a season at OCB. So I can fill him in a little bit about, you know, what type of players they are, what type of guys they are, and how do they fit into the whole grand scheme of things.
Yeah, do you fill out like a big like put the numbers real big? Like when I did hockey, because I did some hockey stuff back in the day, I filled out all the lines and who was playing with who and that kind of thing. And do you do that before the game and have a big cheat sheet?
Yes, and I, having done hockey, I can tell you that is the hardest sport to do, so kudos to you. that game moves fast. Yes, I have a spotting board no matter what sport I do, because I still do baseball, basketball, football, but, in the off season. I have a format, and I switch, and I can even send you guys a copy to share with the readers. That's fine. But, spotting boards are very personal to each announcer. I know, Evan, who's been doing some of the radio games when I'm on TV, he comes from the broadcasting school, the best broadcasting school in the country in Syracuse. And he had a certain spotting board that was passed down through the generations of all the great broadcasters at Syracuse. So he uses that, and then you tweak things like what my board looked like in USL. There are similarities, but now for quick recall, the whole point of having a board is to be able to see the name, the number, but also if I need some bio information real quick, I can refer to it. It's all about quick recall. So you tweak it. I put so many, I usually have the last five games, the next five games coming up, what the results were on the games they just played. You got the heights, the weights, where the players are from, coaching background, the coach's background, the history of the club, when they were founded. I mean, any little bit of information that I need to recall quickly. And a lot of that stuff I have committed to memory over the years. But some guys, I'll look at Keith Costigan from who does games at Seattle. Mm-hmm. He just has stickers. He takes peels off like little Avery stickers and puts them on a manila envelope, and it's just got the very basic of information, and everything else he just recalls from his memory, from his chats or from his notes or whatever. And he has just little clues in there to cue him in on those things. So everybody has a different way of doing things, and what works for me works for me. So
It's funny the way you're describing that. I sell cars, and every year, of course, they update the packages and which one has this and which one has that, and then the colors and everything. And I've got to commit that as much as I can to memory. But then, like, you also have cheat sheets and resources. It was really funny that's the case. And then it got me thinking that, as new players come in, or as, guys move out from OCB to MLS, you're shifting, you've got to make that adjustment on who's where and what you're referring to. While keeping in memory, what they've done and how long they've been there. So the minor little bit of type thing that I do in my job pales in comparison, given that you've also got to then call the plays as it's happening. I don't have to do that in my job. So so I just, mucho respect. Given
to me, it beats working for a living. That's what I always say.
Right. Exactly. So, but given that, I was thinking about this earlier. You were talking about how you knew some of the guys coming up. Who is it you're seeing as you're doing OCB that you would project to in the next year or two that you think is going to be making the leap up to MLS?
Well, we've already seen it this year. They moved him up so quick. Leo Pereira jumped out the first time I saw him, and he was playing at left back. And of course, Pedro, De Silva has been for 2 years now. And, if he can control his temper, he got sent off the other night late in the game. But you talk to opposing coaches in USL, and they game plan for him. He is, I can't remember what coach. It might have been the coach at Rochester that was, he legitimately was scared. So with his talent and ability. I'm thinking of the roster as it's constructed now. But, Earl Edwards, I think this is a guy that's waited his turn and has been tremendous this year. So I would say Earl Edwards, and technically he's an Orlando City player anyway. I'm just trying to think of the USL players that are in here this year that have really signed. There's just so many. Let me get back to you on that one.
No worries.
I have to go back to my notes and stuff, and later in the conversation, I'm sure it will come through. But basically, the guys that you've already seen come up are the ones that really turned your head right off of that, and turned my analyst's head too. Like, wow, that player has been really, really good. So, another resource is Lewis Neal, because I can ask him, hey, who's been standing out because you're playing with him, and he could be a great scouting report really on anybody on that team.
All right, Jeff, before we let you get out of here, I'm going to do a quick little lightning round with you. I'm going to throw some quick questions at you and just give me, you know, the top of your head first answer.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll start out by asking you, what's harder, doing a studio show or play-by-play?
Studio show.
What's more fun, studio show or play-by-play?
Play-by-play.
Your favorite player you've covered for Orlando City?
Brexit.
All right. Best Orlando City moment?
Ooh, another good one. There's two ways to answer this. What is the most, you know, the most memorable moment, and what was, you know, the favorite moment? The most memorable moment was the Pulse game against San Jose. I mean, that's something I'll never forget, being a part of that and watching the city, you know, respond to that tragedy. And, you know, there was a lot of pressure, I think, on that one to live up and do a good job and to respect those lives that were lost and do it right. But, you know, the two wins against the reigning champs always will stand out for me. The game against L.A. the first year, the 4-0 win, and then the 4-1 against Portland last year. And the first game ever. I mean, you can't the Qatar free kick late in the game, and then really the season openers the last two seasons, the first two seasons, a RSL game will always stand out. There's a bunch of them, but yeah, the 6-1 and the lightning rounds, I would have to say it's a tie between those two against the defending champs.
All right, and the last one, the most fun player to watch on the current Orlando City team.
Carlos Rivas when he's on. And since you never know what you're doing, he's like a boxer, he's like the Forrest Gump. You never know what you're going to get. You may get a ball put into orbit, or you may get this amazing run down the left side and a perfect cross to Laren, or maybe just a goal himself where he puts the ball through the net. So, yeah, I think he's to be the most exciting and the most frustrating player at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff Radcliffe, thanks so much for being with us. We really appreciate you joining us on the podcast. We will certainly love to have you come back again sometime. Television and radio broadcaster Jeff Radcliffe, the voice of Orlando City and OCB, thanks for being with us.
Hey, no problem. I love your work, guys. Keep it up. Thanks.
All right, well, episode number 93 of the Mainland Podcast winding down now. But before we get out of here, Dave, we've still got to talk about the Orlando City-Toronto FC game. As this drops on Wednesday, that'll be tonight.
Yes.
So, you know, looking forward to that rematch, because the first game really was a game I thought Orlando should have won. But we had Kyle Laren miss a couple sitters, which almost never happens. And hopefully he gets those same two chances tonight against the Reds. But before we get to that, we do have our Ask the Mainland podcast segment. Light week for us this week, as you'd expect on a holiday week. But Ian F. asks on Twitter, he says, seems a little quiet on the signing front, especially after the increasing rumor of Quintero. Who's in store? Referring to Juan Quintero, the Colombian, who's been rumored to be coming to Orlando City. Who's in store? That is a great question, because it seems like every time we think we know who's coming to Orlando City, that somehow doesn't happen, and then someone else comes in that we weren't even expecting and then does a great job. I mean, remember Gregory Sertic was a guy that we had our eyes on, and it was a big rumor, and there was an offer apparently made, and we didn't hear anything for a couple of days. It kind of cooled a little bit, then all of a sudden we got Jonathan Spector, and nobody saw the Scott Sutter thing coming. So that's a great question. If Quintero happens, I really hope the numbers that are being thrown out there in the rumor mill are way off base, because we're talking about Chicharito level numbers in terms of
right,
the price tag. And I don't think that he's a guy that you want to spend that kind of money on. I think you can get two or three other guys for that cost and really, really improve your team. So I'm hoping that the money numbers are off. Now, I don't really know as much about Quintero as some people do. A lot of people seem very excited by him, but you know, it's hard to say whether or not he's the answer that we need or not. Certainly, you want to see the team address the attacking midfield, and you still want the team to address the striker position to provide some more quality depth there.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Chicharito, because I was like, oh, why aren't we talking about him? Because it seems like we always talk about him every time transfer rumors come up. But and I'm sure now that we've said that, that it'll be in an article, you know, this coming week. I'm not so sure that he is the answer. And I don't think that that's how, from what we've seen, that's not obviously not how Jason works. You know, he goes out, he doesn't necessarily hunt down big names. He's going to go get the guys he thinks he can plug in that are going to do the job that he wants them to do. And I don't think that you and I or anybody else is going to know who the heck that is until we find out. So that's why I said earlier, I'm, you know, after the whole MPG going, I'm really looking forward to this transfer window to see what the heck happens. Cause I have absolutely no idea. And, you know, of course, then what Jason will do is he'll completely nullify everything I just said, and we'll bring him in. So,
yeah. You know. Well, if you're going to bring in a $10 million player, I mean, bring in as a striker who can work both with Laren and then be the main guy after Laren leaves. Like, you look at a guy like Nikolic, and obviously those guys don't grow on trees, but he's a striker who not only gets himself into good positions to score goals. And what has he got, 16 goals now? But he also is able to send other people in to score goals. And that's something that we haven't seen really much of from Laren. I mean, if you're going to bring in a second striker to maybe take Rivas' spot in the lineup, he's got to be a guy who can provide service, because, you know, that's not something that's in the Laren skill set. But, you know, if you get a guy who can both score goals like Laren at that kind of rate or close to it, doesn't have to be quite that high, and also set other guys up, then I think, you know, that's the type of guy that really should be targeting. Carlos Rivas, for me, like Jeff said, you know, you're going to get just brilliance one game, and you never know what you're getting the next game. And we really can't be spending DP money on a guy like that. I think that he's a guy who still has some upside, still a fairly young dude, but, you know, if the team wants to win now, they got to go get a player that can help them win now. And I don't think Carlos Rivas necessarily is the guy to do that job.
No, so it's the possibilities are endless as far as, you know, who stays, who goes. You know, it'll be really interesting. Obviously, I don't think, you know, Laren's going anywhere, certainly not Kaká. But, you know, Rivas is a possibility. Do I think it's likely? I don't know that I think it's likely, but it's all going to depend on which area that, you know, Jason wants to focus on. If he's going to focus more on the, you know, the midfield and some of the defensive midfield, given, you know, Higuita, then who knows? We do need to up our attack. And so it's, I don't know. I'm waiting with great anticipation. So.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens. But thanks, ENF, for the email, or for the question. If you want to ask us anything, doesn't have to be soccer related, but it can be. You can hit us up on Twitter. We're at The Mainland, and just give us hashtag AskTMLPC, and we will answer your questions on the air. So do that, or you can email us, themainland@gmail.com. Let us know your questions that way. So you can get those into us. We'll be happy to answer them. Dave, before we get out of here, Orlando City hosts a very, very dangerous team in Toronto FC. It's a good time to play Toronto in that, even though the U.S. didn't take Bradley and Josie from the Reds for this Gold Cup, a lot of other guys are missing, including Toussaint Ricketts and Raheem Edwards, I believe, is missing for this as well. And they just lost Stephen Betashore, who had a pancreas issue, I think, and had to have some abdominal surgery. So a little bit depleted Toronto team, but of Toronto, one of the deepest teams in MLS. So if there's a team that can deal with it deal with these kinds of issues. It's definitely Toronto. They're going to be really dangerous coming off a loss to FC Dallas. Absolutely no shame in losing to FC Dallas, but they're going to have their hackles up, and they're going to be even more determined not to drop a second game in a row. So it's going to be very difficult for Orlando City to win that second game in a row that they need, because they haven't done that since the end of April. Dave, what's your key matchup, and how do you see this thing playing out as a final score?
Okay, so key matchup is going to have to be the defensive line against Toronto's attack. I mean, you've got Giovinco, you've got Altidore, you've got Bradley feeding, you know, from the midfield. I mean, like you said, they're very deep. They still have a lot of players. They're still very, very dangerous on the attack. So I think how we can absorb that pressure will be the determining factor in whether, whether we get any points out of this or not. I'm hating to do this. I always hate to do this, but I'm thinking it's going to be 2-1 loss. Toronto's in second with 35 points. They're incredibly dangerous. Giovinco has come back, and he's found his form again. So I expect the Atomic Ant to get at least one on us. So I'm going to go 2-1, unfortunately, and just hope that I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think that for me, obviously, the key matchup is going to also be I think it's going to be Tommy Redding stepping in for AHA after the short turnaround. Not as short as normal, because they played Friday night instead of Saturday night. And then they chartered back right after the game. So hopefully that will save their legs a little bit. But I think you'll see Tommy start in place of Jose for this game. And I think because his mobility will help him against Giovinco. So I think it's Tommy versus Gio, and also to a lesser degree against Josie, and you're going to see your normal stuff from Specter. But I think how does Tommy hold up against those two guys? And he's done pretty well against them in the past at times. So we'll see. That to me is a key matchup. Sort of a secondary key matchup is, can they get at the fullbacks? Because the fullback situation right now is not great for Toronto with Morrow and Betashore out. So I think if you can get at their fullbacks, their replacement guys, that's going to be a key to the attack. If Carlos Rivas can get unleashed against those replacement guys, I think it could lead to some good chances as he sends crosses in for Laren. And I think that's a good secondary key matchup to look for. My prediction, and I sent this earlier to the SB Nation Toronto FC blog, Waking the Red, is also 2-1. I just think the Reds have too much firepower, and Orlando City still, to me, doesn't look quite in form like they were earlier in the year. So it was good to get that win. I hope I'm wrong. I hope we can get a result out of this going into the break and get a big boost. This is the time. If you're going to get a result against Toronto, it's a good time to do it now when they got some guys missing. But they still have Victor Vasquez, and they still have Giovinco, and they still have Altidore, they still have Bradley. Still a lot to contend with on that Toronto team. So I'm predicting 2-1. I think Laren gets back on the score sheet.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like I said earlier, I think he's really motivated, so I do think that's where our goal comes from. As far as them, I think Giovinco gets both of them.
He could, but I think Josie Altidore has scored just as many goals against us as Giovinco over the last couple of years. So yeah. Josie's always a pain in the neck to deal with, just with his combination of size and speed. And then, of course, he'll probably dive in the box and get a penalty at some point. He's very, very dainty for a big man when it comes to the penalty area, I've noticed over the last couple of years. So
very, very small ankles.
Yeah. So anyway, there you have it. Those are key matchups, our predictions for Orlando City versus Toronto FC. We hope that we get a gargantuan effort from the Lions, and hopefully maybe Kaká's best game of the season. And we'll look for Laren to get back on the score sheet, and maybe they can get something out of this game going into the Gold Cup break, which isn't really terribly long, but they'll at least have a little bit of time to rest up, and they won't have to play three games in 8 days for at least a couple of weeks. So That'll do it for episode number 93 of the Mainland Podcast. Once again, want to thank Jeff Radcliffe, our guest, television and radio broadcaster for Orlando City and Orlando City B, and obviously he does other sports as well. Thanks so much to Jeff for coming on. One thing we can always say about Jeff is he's a true professional. Really enjoy picking his brain at when I can make it out to training and talking to him and stuff and seeing what he sees, because those guys get to watch a lot more of the practice than we do because they're insiders. So thanks to Jeff. That was great. We're definitely going to have him on again in the future. So thank you, Mr. Radcliffe. If you could check us out on iTunes and maybe leave us a rating and a nice review, that'd be good. That would help us reach more listeners. We would really be grateful for that. Please read our stuff at themainland.com, SB Nation's Orlando City website. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/themainland, and of course follow us on Twitter @themainland. So those are all the outlets you can find us. We even have a YouTube page that we sometimes put videos on occasionally. But thank you again. Thanks to Jeff Radcliffe, and on behalf of David Rowe, our writer, our correspondent, Tallahassee correspondent, I am Michael Citro, the managing editor and founder of The Mainland, signing off as I always do by saying, go City!